Welcome to this week's episode. Today we have Jake Ducey joining us. Jake is 24 years old, and he has not only published two books, but he is actually releasing a third, Profit from Happiness. He's been on TEDx. He has done all sorts of incredible speaking gigs. Unbelievable amount of work for somebody who is only 24 years old. But what's so cool about this interview and what I know you're going to love, I loved chatting with this guy. He was, you know, a typical young guy on his way into business, and he decided he didn't know why he was doing it. He ventured off, he backpacked around the world, he traveled everywhere to figure out what he wanted to do with his life. He landed on writing these books, but it's really incredible to hear him talk about his inspirations, his thoughts, how he feels about fear and facing fears and pushing through them, how he approaches projects, how he has accomplished so much in such a short period of time. He's interested in happiness, success, purpose, how to make a difference, and how to do all those things without sacrificing earning a living. Check out this episode. I loved talking to this guy, and I know you're going to love it too. Thank you so much for listening. Welcome to this week's episode. Today we have Jake Ducey joining us. Hey, Jake, how's it going?
It is going wonderful, and it's great to be here with you.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm excited to chat with you. Jake is a three-time author of Into the Wild, The Purpose Principles, and Profit from Happiness. But what's crazy is Jake reached out to me and tell us, how old are you at this point?
24.
24. And you somehow managed to get three books done. I can't even believe it. We were just talking before the show for a minute. Writing one was incredible. How long does it take you to write a book? Are you somebody who goes underground and just shows back up a month later with a draft in hand? How does that happen?
Yeah, I don't go underground though, because I haven't exactly figured out the tunneling system for oxygen and stuff. So I just go into a room.
All right, that's
fair. And I generally do them pretty fast. Yeah, a couple months. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's, do you have a process that you go through to get these books done? Do you have a system that you've come up with? I mean, that's just incredible to get that many done.
Yeah. I heard this Charles Bukowski quote one time, and I'm totally going to butcher it, but he just said something to the effect of sit and wait for it to come, for the idea to form. And when it does, start. And if it doesn't, quit. And I'll get like my last book that is out in June. I had the deal, right? And everything was done, but it wasn't there. I didn't feel it yet. And like weeks had gone by and I was heading out on tour soon. So I had to have the whole book done before I left, and I hadn't got there yet. And so I kind of wait for it to like really accumulate. And then once it's just like this feeling, and then I'm like, okay, it's here. And then I sit down, and then it kind of just all comes out. And that's really, I don't have much of a system. I drink high quantities of caffeine and it seems to come right out of me.
That's incredible. So it's kind of almost sounds like an artistic process. Like it just, you have a sensibility about it, and it's like an artist with a paintbrush or something.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could liken it to that. Yeah, it's just kind of waiting for that feeling to just kind of emerge. And when I feel it, then I, you know, we all know our bodies and our minds. And so when it's there, then I just kind of let it come out.
It's incredible. Maybe I'll give that a shot on my next book. So Jake, I wanted to chat with you a little bit about like the beginning of this process for you. And I was reading and listening to some of your stuff, and I thought it was so interesting that you were on a path towards business. You weren't happy. You were trying to figure out how to design a life that made sense for you, to find something that worked for you. And you mentioned that you were at sort of a crossroads where you're like, maybe I'll start traveling, but the voices in your head started to come up and say, you know, is this really crazy? I feel like so many people get to these crossroads where they're not happy. They know they want to try something, but that voice in their head gets so loud and the people around them tell them, you know, how could you do this? Stay the path. How did you break through that?
I broke through it by realizing that courage isn't the absence of fear. You know, courage is the ability to be scared and do it anyways. Nelson Mandela says something to the effect of that. And I think that when you put things really into perspective, like, okay, what's the worst that could happen? You know, like, not that much. I mean, the worst that could happen is I go back to school. For me, it was I was in business school and I had a few thousand dollars saved. Okay, the worst is I come back to school in a year. And I think when we break it down and we get away, because the mind immediately goes to the worst thing that could happen. And then we're imagining ourselves falling off a cliff and then being homeless. And like, it just goes to these irrational extremes. And like, the chances of, by making a change in your life, for you to become totally homeless, without food, and living on the street is highly unlikely, unless maybe you've come from that background, which would be understandable, but it's highly unlikely if you're not. Mm-hmm. And I think we go to this illogical extremes and we never examine them. And I think instead, if you said, well, what's the best that could happen? And you kind of looked at that the same way, you'd find that. And I think we would find that the things that seem to hold us back from ever taking steps in our life and in any capacity aren't really that logical. And I think when we can accept that and kind of accept the craziness, maybe I might be a little crazy, but maybe let's get this crazy out and see what happens.
And you start off by saying courage is not the absence of fear, so do it with fear. But a lot of people find fear really paralyzing. How do you move forward with fear? Because one of the things I'm really passionate about is making friends with fear, realizing it's just part of the process, learning how to live side by side. What's your system around that? How do you do it?
Well, after a couple times doing things that scare me, I seem to find that the best breakthroughs emotionally and financially seem to do when I do things that scare me. So now I just know that I ought to do it. Mm. And I think if we're actually genuinely honest with ourselves, that's the problem, is we lie to ourselves so much. That's why we feel so much stress. It's generally our stress is because we lie to ourselves for so long and we're not doing what we know we ought to do.
What do you mean when you say that?
I mean that if you really look at a lot of people's stress, I think it's because they know that they should have went and asked that person out, or they should have talked to that person, or that they should be experimenting on the side with painting or music, or they should spend their weekend trying to build that part-time business and see if they can grow it, or they, whatever it is, right? We all have our things that we know. And I think we suppress the calling for so long that it expresses itself as stress, and we don't know what the stress is. So then we think, well, maybe the vacation will solve it, but it's this unconscious stress from suppressing our desires for so long, and it creates anxiety and it creates stress. And I think when we can be honest with ourselves and really embrace our desires, we find a lot of emotional freedom.
Yeah. No, I, you know, this is what I do. I coach people who are downstream and they come to me and they're stressed, they're anxious, they're, you know, depressed, all different things. And we're very aware of those emotional states, but we don't back up and say, well, where did this come from? How come I'm feeling this way? And it's a lot of these messages we tell ourselves, right?
Yeah. And it's really scary to take the next step backwards. It's easy to say I'm stressed, but it's a lot harder to say, you know, to be honest, I've kind of been lying to myself. You know, I haven't been that real with myself about, like, it seems like I really want this thing or this to talk to this person. Like, it doesn't need to be a career change. I mean, it could just be, you know, you keep seeing that person at the gym, but you keep not talking to them. And then you keep telling yourself you're an idiot throughout the week and you're not good enough because you just won't do it.
Yeah.
And I think those voices in our head go away when we can just take the step.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, right? Because if we flip it around and we challenge those voices, then it forces us to maybe take action. And, you know, that's hard. And so it is. It's a lot easier to say, you know, and culture, really, all of us get along really well complaining to each other. So it's okay to walk around and say, like, I'm so stressed, I'm so unhappy, right? Like, oh yeah, me too. But, you know, I'm going to do something about that is not part of the paradigm a lot of times.
Yeah, I like to say fear is like the monster under your bed. You know, when you're 4 years old or seven, or I don't know, some people are 15 and they're screaming to their mom that there's a monster under their bed. Mom, mom, mom. And then mom runs in and she's upset. She's like, look, Jake, this is the third time you've done this in 4 hours. There's not a monster under your bed. Come here. She grabs me by my shirt and she's all pissed off. Look under your bed. And I'm like, okay. And I look under and there's not a monster. I'm like, okay, there's actually not a monster in your bed. But it felt real because my nervous system, my subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between real and not real. It just accepts what the dominant thought is. So it produces these fear hormones and it goes through my nervous system and it feels real. But if I actually take the step and examine if there's really a monster there, if this fear is actually legitimate, I find out it's not and I fall asleep at night. And I think the fears in our lives are a lot of times like the monster under our bed. And if we can just look under the bed and see if it's a legitimate fear, we often find it doesn't have as much power as we thought it did.
Absolutely. And who have been your big influencers in thinking through all these ideas? I mean, you know, not to at all be patronizing, but at 24 to have written 3 books about purpose and principles, and that's heavy stuff. It takes people a lifetime to think about. Did you have family or philosophy or psychology? What were the bigger influences?
Yeah, well, I've been patronized, so that's okay too if you want to do that.
Not at all. Not at all.
One book that really changed my life was Ralph Waldo Emerson's Self-Reliance. I really love Ralph Waldo Emerson. But, you know, these dead writers became my friends. And, you know,
yeah,
I started reading a lot of their books and et cetera, et cetera. But I think it doesn't matter how old you are. Age has no license on wisdom. It has no license on experience. And it doesn't matter what age we are, when we can start asking ourselves critical questions, who am I, why am I here, what do I really want, what's stopping me, we come to a lot greater understanding of who we are and what we want. And so, you know, I loved Ralph Waldo Emerson. Today, the biggest influence in my life, Bob Proctor. Love Bob Proctor. He's a personal development author, speaker, seminar leader, mentor of mine, and someone that I admire dearly. I study him every single day. Love Bob. My girlfriend's been a big influence on my life, you know, just from the perspective of helping me slow down. But yeah, I mean, in terms of, to answer your question, in terms of an author or someone like that, would be Ralph Waldo Emerson, Wayne Dyer, Eckhart Tolle, Bob Proctor, folks like that. I think that helped me realize that I'm a lot smarter and a lot more powerful than I thought that I was. And that's so for everyone.
That's awesome. And did you have, were your, some people's parents come down so hard on them early in life that it takes them a while to get off the path? You know, this podcast and a lot of my work is dedicated to this concept of, you know, how to live an authentic life. Did you have parents that were supportive up front to, you know, thinking about what made sense for you?
My mom was supportive if it made sense in context to the prototypical path. My mom thought I was crazy. She was crying. She thought I ruined my life. Okay. And she's very supportive now. No, she thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's because there's a certain paradigm that says this is what reality is. And when you step outside of it, then something's wrong with you.
Absolutely.
My dad was really supportive. Parents are divorced. And dad was like, hey, I mean, go back to school. If it doesn't work out, you know, you have some money saved up. So why don't you just go do it?
Nice.
So yeah, I lost a lot of my friends. And so I definitely can experience that. I'm sure your listeners, when we step into this new way that we want to live and this way we want to show up, you know, people don't resonate with us. We don't resonate with people like we did before.
It can be hard because there's an expectation from family and culture to sort of stay the path. And, you know, you do really have to, like you said, face fears and push through all the mental noise. So you talk a lot about following passion without sacrificing financial success. And I think, you know, as a millennial, I'm 45, but I've become friends with a big group of millennial entrepreneurs. You know, this is such a huge topic because the rising cost of education, the pressure to make money feels even bigger when you're coming out with real debt and stuff. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by that?
Yeah. Well, money is a concept. And wealth is a state of consciousness. And those are big distinctions. And so I think when Napoleon Hill says more gold has been mined from the mines of man than from the earth. And I think when we can get clear on that, that money is created from ideas. Money needs an avenue through which to flow. And if we can provide a valuable service, a valuable need, then we can be passionate about that and see that we're, you know, in some way, shape, or form, whether it's providing great alkaline water to somebody or whether it's writing books or whether it's Yeah, the Amazon guy helps me every day when he drops my packages off. You know, everyone has their own thing that sure. feels like the service they enjoy and the way they like to live their life. But yeah, that's a thing from our culture that, you know, passion is separate than profit. But if you actually look at the people that make the most money in the world, they didn't distinguish between the two of them. Rich people pick people that often live struggling. We often choose like, well, I have to pick one or the other. And rich people generally say, how can I have both? Mm-hmm. And if you look at all the wealthiest people in the world, they never were like, okay, now it's time to be professional. They said, well, how can I turn this passion into a profession? How can I mold the two together? You know, it's like that adage, follow your heart, but bring your head. Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, every major industry, the leaders of the industry are generally passionate about it, and they've made a lot of money at it. So, I mean, the opportunities out there, I mean, it's, if that answers your question.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the big questions then becomes, if you're trying to bring the two together and you've been spoon-fed your education and told this is the path, you really haven't exercised the muscle of finding out what your passion is. Do you have any suggestions for somebody, you know, jumping out into the world, or maybe they've took the like straightforward path, but now they're ready for a passion play to start to find what their passions really are?
Yeah. Well, first, you know, I always say, like, even when I'm working with, like, coaching someone, right, like, and they want to do something else, I always encourage them to keep their job, or at least part-time, to afford all their, you know, I think it's important to really break down how much am I spending a month in order to keep living the way I'm living. When we get clear on that, you know, we could keep our job currently and on the side start to build our other practice. And I'm in no way, shape, or form, I don't advocate quitting everything and trying to start something from scratch. It's generally not that realistic. But to answer your question—
And I appreciate you saying that, because I feel like way too many people suggest, you know, just follow your dreams. And I mean, this podcast is really dedicated to debunking the idea of just like, find passion and everything will be fine. you have to be a little realistic, right?
Yeah. I mean, and if you look at anyone who's, I mean, making 6, 7 figures, 8 figures, doing something that they're passionate about, it didn't happen overnight. So, I mean,
yeah,
things take time. I mean, I have a client that has a good job. She's a designer and she wants to start traveling. She doesn't know what she wants to do. It's like, all right, that's cool. Why don't we start with getting 2 months off? Like, you know, you can do that. Like, you make really good money. And on the other extreme, someone that I know is making, you know, $2,000 a month at their job and they don't want to be there and they want to get into real estate. Okay, so let's keep your job. Let's start saving 30% of your income. And that's going to be your safety fund when you eventually make the jump into real estate. Take gradual steps. But to answer your question, I think I really like this one. I read it in a book. I forget what book it was. But the question was basically like, if you had a guaranteed monthly income for the next 10 years, what would you do? You know, if you could provide a valuable service in some way, shape, or form, what would it be? And I think that's always an interesting thing to consider. Like, if money was an object, what would I do? Or what would have to happen a year from now for me to look back and say it was my most successful, my most fulfilling year yet? And I think that's always a good one. What would have to happen a year from now for me to look back, say it was my most successful, my most fulfilling year yet? And for some people, it's gaining 10 pounds of muscle. For some, it's losing 10 pounds of fat. For some, it's writing a book. For some, it's to get a part-time business that's up to $1,000 a month. For other people, it's to travel for a while, right? To fix a relationship with a girlfriend or with a dad or with a spouse. And so what would have to happen a year from now to look back, say it was my most successful, my most fulfilling year yet? And when you know what that is and you can distill it into one or two sentences, you can create an actionable plan in order to start to make that happen, and in no matter what it is. So I always like that, because if we're honest with ourselves, you know, it's not going to take up all of our time. You can do it on the weekend. I mean, my girlfriend is phasing out her current job for her next occupation, and she loves doing art. She wood burns. So she's making almost as much money as her full-time job wood burning right now on the side, like at night and on the weekends. And so there's always time to work on these things without, you know, 360 degree flipping our life on the spot, which can be really scary.
Yeah. And I love what you're saying in there for everybody listening, you know, starting with yourself and then breaking it out in these smaller pieces, right? So many people look out in the world and think, what do I want to do? And they look around at 800 different things and then just get overwhelmed. But starting with yourself, what do you really want? What would it look like if you were looking back at, you know, over the last year, what would happiness look like? Is such an easier place to begin. And if that's still a challenge and you're stuck, often, right, like, look at the hobbies you're doing. I mean, look at the things that you would just enjoy where time moves by and you're just enjoying doing. Because I think often people think, well, I can't do that. That's just a hobby that I, you know, that's not even an option. They rule out some things that maybe you could figure out a way to make money.
Yeah. And my girlfriend's a perfect example of it. She just makes art in her spare time. And now she's making like $1,500 a month selling it. It's like, if you just apply the fact that you could probably charge for it, if you just started investing more time and take it more seriously, you could probably make some form of income off of it. Even if it, I mean, it'd be awesome for some people that are painting or making music to make $200 in a month, you know, just the fact that you can start to do that. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
And you just look at those hobbies.
You've been so successful in networking and connecting to all these great authors and business leaders, and I noticed, you know, you sent me an email that was so compelling, and I get hit up with a lot of people who want to come on the show, and I just can't bring everybody on. And truthfully, a lot of the emails are, I don't know, they're lacking in authenticity, they're lacking a voice, or they're coming from a PR rep. How do you, because I think another part of the whole puzzle is getting yourself out into the world and figuring out how to take the passion and have people respond to it. Did you study certain marketing philosophies? Like, because you're awfully, that was an awfully good email.
Yeah, no, I don't study marketing. I did, if I study anyone, Tim Ferriss and just how he goes about contacting people. So I just learned, you know, I packed in a good punch with you, but it was only like four sentences and I left it at, I didn't say thanks in advance or like implying like you're going to have me on, which I think people do a lot of times. And it's like, you know, so I applied some of those things, you know, at the beginning. I said, I know you're very busy, but those are things I learned from how Tim does his emails. So marketing, I don't really have a marketing strategy. My only marketing strategy is to put myself out there in as authentic way as I can, because if I have a great marketing strategy and I pick videos that I think people will like, they're not going to do as well as when I have 3% of my battery and this is just genuinely what I feel and it comes out. Like my most viewed video had 3% of my battery and it was just genuinely what I was feeling and experiencing. And it's got a lot, you know, it did very, very well.
Was that the one of you on a swing upside down?
No, that's a funny one though. It was a one on a dock out in Minnesota I was visiting. It's got like almost 400,000 views and it had 2% battery. But then on the other time, I paid videographers $1,000 to make a video and they've gotten 2,000 views.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just really important, instead of marketing, be consistent and be authentically you. I always say most people are trying to be professional. Why don't you instead find out who you are and turn it into a profession?
Yeah, it's such great advice with all the social media out there and all the different, you know, I always say this, I started a company before all this stuff was, I mean, kind of embarrassingly dates me, but pre-internet and all the social media. But in certain ways, it was easier because you weren't always comparing yourself to everybody. And there's so much noise out there. To come back to yourself and just really do what you feel in your gut is a really helpful way to move through things.
Yeah, I think it's a Wayne Dyer quote. You don't get what you want, you get what you are.
Yeah.
And so I always like when things aren't working out, it always leads back to, even if it's marketing, like it always leads back to me and what's coming up for me and where I'm not being something and how I'm not showing up. And everyone that I know that is big time players, at least the ones that I'm good friends with, look at it the same way. I mean, they have their strategies, but at the end of the day, their main strategy is consistency. And the rest is really working on themselves. And I think when you couple consistency with really improving yourself, you get results. Like, people notice that and they feel that, and you can move forward and people want to help you. And I think that's what I think.
It's awesome. I love it. And so, Jake, since you've think so much about this stuff, I'm dying to ask. I ask every person that comes on this show, what does an authentic life then mean to you?
If you don't like to wear shoes, you shouldn't wear shoes that often. It should be able to do what you feel, but without creating conflict with others that disagree, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. A lot of times we want to be like middle fingers in the air, like, this is who I am. Like, if it was really who you are, why do you need to keep telling me it's who you are? And so,
that's so good.
Yeah, be that maybe.
That's so good. Right. So be authentic, but just own it. You don't need to flaunt it and make it a.
And explain yourself. I think we get in this thing where we're constantly trying to explain ourselves. And there's this quote Bob Proctor always talks about from Kierkegaard Sorenstrand or something like that. And I don't remember the whole quote, but he has one of the sentences says, to worship the God of opinion or the God of our own hearts. I think oftentimes in the vein of authenticity, we're worrying about people think, or we're explaining ourselves why we are the way that we are. And so I think that when you can really come from that place and do what you feel and not need to explain yourself or be argumentative, like, you can just say, okay, I understand, you know, to someone, instead of like, I do this because this and this and this and this. If you're really coming from your heart and your soul, you don't need to do that. There's no, the heart and the soul don't have a desire to explain themselves to people as to why they are the way that they are, because they're just totally comfortable and at peace and they accept that some people see blue and you see red.
Yeah, and that you're just living your life and happily doing so, right, without needing to justify it or explain it. And that's you're the first person who's mentioned that one. And I have to say, I love it, because the moment you need to justify or explain your own authentic life, I mean, doesn't that contradict the concept? Right?
Yeah.
Right? This is so meaningful and authentic to me. So let me tell you why I need to do these. Right?
Laird Hamilton, I interviewed Laird Hamilton, for you listening. He's that big wave surfer. You've probably seen a clip that surfs like the 100-foot waves. He's the greatest big wave surfer who ever lived. And when I interviewed him, he was talking about how, you know how like people say, you know, what's your why and what do you want and all that thing like that. He was like, when I really want something, I don't even know how to explain it. I don't even try. It's just like this thing in my gut, and like people don't really get it, but I just have to do it. And, you know, I think, I don't know why I was just thinking of that when we were talking. It's like, it's not this expressible thing. It's just like this feeling that you have to show up this way. And you're going to continue to show up that way, and you're not going to expend your energy, because you when you're living authentically you realize that your energy is valuable, and you don't need to expend your energy proving your energy. You're just there.
Yeah, dude, that's really good. My favorite is T.S. Eliot's Four Quartets. He always says, a still point in the turning world.
Nice. I like that.
Right. It's just this little space, and it's just there, and the world is moving around you, and it's hard to explain what it is. And very cool. So if you were to explain to some of the people listening what your daily practices or habits to like really hold on to that space, you know, if you're facing difficulties or, you know, writing that next book, fear is showing up, what are your daily habits and practices?
Exercise is really important. Generally, when I'm feeling agitated or whatever, not all the time, but a lot of times it's like I haven't really moved my body. And I walk and stuff, and I'm big on walking, but when I mean move my body, I mean genuinely move my body, and like really I'm not on my cell phone, like I'm not texting, like I'm genuinely for 30 minutes to 60 minutes I'm exerting myself physically. And that's not just about the physical body, that's about mental toughness as well. And so I go to the gym pretty much every day of the week, and I try and get stronger every day. I have my own hypnosis programs, meditation, writing my lists of what I'm grateful for. My girlfriend and I have a great practice of expressing that when we walk around. What are you grateful for? What are you grateful for? And now we've done it for so long that it's a habit. And so developing those types of things where it becomes a habit, where the mind more quickly goes to gratitude. And I listen to Bob Proctor all the time, his Science of Getting Rich program. I probably listen to some of the audios 100 times.
Oh my God.
I just plug them in and I sit for 10 minutes or 15 minutes, things like that.
What do you mean your girlfriend and you walk around? Tell me more about that.
When we go on our walk, you know, like instead of like, so what happened at work today? I don't ask her that. I'm like, what are you grateful for?
Nice.
You know, I'm not like, so was Susie nice to you today at work? I'm like, so what are you grateful for? Or I just say, I'm so happy and grateful that money comes to me in increasing quantities through many sources on a continuous basis. What are you grateful for? And, nice. You know, like that. And I do that to even, I had a friend a while ago come over for dinner and he was like really excited. He dug it, but he had never the practice of expressing gratitude. It makes you just feel good. So I try and just do things that make me feel good.
Very cool. The positive psychologists say if you pick three new things to be grateful for, it actually works a lot better. Because a lot of people are like, I'm grateful for my house. I'm grateful for my kids. Like they say the same three things every day. So that helps.
That makes sense. Yeah, for sure. The novel idea kind of probably creates some more brain chemistry movement or something like that.
It helps you scan the world for different things. So if you're always thinking different things, then your brain starts scanning and then it becomes a habit to look for it.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's cool.
Yeah, so you're sort of naturally doing that. That's very cool. And so you were saying you listen to CDs. So you have a long practice. What's with hypnosis? What do you do there?
Well, I'm kind of a geek on the conscious and subconscious mind. It's what I'm most maybe my next book, I think, I'll probably talk more about that. But it's like my life is really, my income, everything has really changed when I've understood. A human is hardly ever conscious. Mm-hmm. Pretty much our entire life, and you know this, pretty much our entire life is unconscious. 65,000 thoughts, probably 64,785 of them you don't even remember during the day.
Right, right.
Everything's unconscious. And so I was learning about it, and that's one reason I love Bob Proctor. I was learning about it, and I was like, because that's all hypnosis is. Hypnosis is, they relax you enough to get your conscious mind out of the way. Your conscious mind is what knows past, present, future. It has reasoning capacities. I tell you that your name's Jared and you say, my name's not Jared. That's your conscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
But your subconscious, which is your unconscious, it controls pretty much your entire life, has no capacity for reasoning. Whatever is suggested to it enough becomes reality. That's why people think I'm not good enough, I'm not good enough. It's just been suggested long enough. They don't even know why that thought's there. And so I got obsessed with it because I realized like everyone is under a state of hypnosis. Your entire life is hypnosis. Whatever your income is, that's a state of hypnosis. That's all it is. So I got really into it and I was like, well, why don't I just take this like to a extreme? And I bought a nice microphone and I recorded my own self-hypnosis about money. And I have another one about, you know, my perfect day. I listen to the money one more. And it just tells me over and over again that I'm so happy and grateful. Money comes to me in increasing quantities through many sources on a continuous basis. I'm getting richer. I'm providing greater service to the world. I give my talents with love and I'm wonderfully blessed financially. The more and more that soaks in, the more and more that's all you see and experience and find the evidence of, because it's just your unconscious expressing itself and playing out. So I was like, well, why don't I just reprogram my subconscious the way I want it? And that's the thing, is that that's why people don't get what they want, because their desire is conscious, but there's this gap where they're like, I know what I should do, but I'm not doing it. That's their unconscious. There's a gap between the conscious and the subconscious. So I'm a geek on programming the subconscious mind into ways that are most conducive, because if most of my life is unconscious, then I'd like my unconscious faculties to be creating more wealth, happiness, and love for me.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. Really awesome stuff, Jake. I'm so grateful you reached out. Your new book is coming out, Profit from Happiness.
Yeah, it's out June 7th. Thank you. Yeah, it was great to talk to you too.
Absolutely. And if people want to check out the book or check out more information, where can they find information about you?
Okay, cool. Thanks. You have the sweetest voice. You just sound like you're just so like gentle and real, and I'm sure your listeners love you.
That's so sweet. Thank you.
But yeah, my website is everything's just my name, Jake Ducey, J-K-E, Ducey, D as in David, U as in umbrella, C-E-Y, and you type that in on Amazon, you could find all my books, or, you know, for people that like to get in the car and go to Barnes & Noble, you could find it there too, and that's, you could find me on most of the social media avenues through my name.
Awesome. Well, you guys should check him out because he's definitely, I think, preaching incredible stuff here, doing great things, and support him in his work. So thank you so much, Jake, for coming on the show.
Yeah, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for having me.